This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The novelist Jennifer Close was born and raised here in Illinois on the North Shore of Chicago. Her fourth novel, out this spring, is called Marrying the Ketchups. We'll explain the title a little later. It begins against the backdrop of two recent world historic events. They both happened within the span of 1 week in November 2016.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play.
The Associated Press is calling Wisconsin, so that puts him over the top. Donald Trump is the next president of the United States. We can project it on the basis of an Associated Press report that Donald Trump will win the state of Wisconsin. That is 10 more electoral votes. 269, 279, you need 270 to be president. Our next president will be Donald Trump.
Wow.
So...
Wow.
That, I mean, it's just, you just have to give it to him and say wow, and to say this is really
remember that? Wow, indeed. It's after these events, plus the death of the family patriarch, that members of the Sullivan family find themselves drawn back to their third-generation restaurant in Oak Park, Illinois. J.P. Sullivan's is a nice place, not too trendy, not too cheap either, the kind of restaurant local families go to for everything from graduations to good report cards. And Sullivan's, the restaurant, and the family are at the heart of the book Marrying the Ketchups. The story centers on the grandchildren of the restaurant founder. Teddy has just been dumped by his longtime boyfriend, who inexplicably keeps showing up for lunch at Sullivan's. Jane is worried her lawyer husband might be having an affair with someone from his CrossFit group. And Gretchen is reckoning with whether she wasted a decade of her life in a 90s cover band that was briefly, at least, big in New York City, hence the third eye blind to open this conversation. The book is getting great reviews, including from the New York Times, so I'm thrilled to be able to say, Jennifer Close, welcome to The 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I have to say, not ready to hear those two clips of the Cubs and then the election. That just,
It does
got a lot of emotion back.
Yeah, it does take you back, doesn't it? So, all right. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because... You know, this story is, it's a family drama, but it's interesting that it's set against this backdrop of really Trump's election. Can you talk about why you chose to weave that into the Sullivan story?
Sure. I mean, I think the first answer that I always give is I did not choose to do it. I did not plan on it. It was, I was writing this book before 2016, and I knew it was a family-owned restaurant. I knew I wanted to be in Chicago. And, you know, I was just writing along. And then when the Cubs won, I just kind of had this thought of, oh, I want to work this in. This means so much for people from, you know, for people from Chicago. This family, the Sullivans, I know they would be big Cubs fans. I'm going to work this into the story. And once I did that, I couldn't ignore the election, because I also knew they lived in a place that was politically aware, politically active. I knew that this would sort of be the backdrop of their lives. So those two things really took over the book. In a lot of ways, I kind of had to start over. I had something set, but once those two things started to creep in, it was just like they took over the book, and it took me a lot longer to finish than I had planned because of that, because it was just, it was really hard, you know, to see their lives without these two things sort of overshadowing it.
Yeah, these two major events in the history of America and in the world, and certainly Chicagoland for the Cubs. So, you know, one other aspect of the book that weaves through it is this idea of restaurant families, too. You have experience working in the industry, right? Can you talk, what was your experience in restaurants?
I do. I worked as a waitress, I don't know if for anyone out there that's familiar, at Hackney's on Harms in Glenview. And I loved, I worked during college and a little bit after in the summers. And then once I graduated and moved back to Chicago for a bit, I was there while I was looking for, you know, a full-time job. But it's a really fun, I mean, I had a lot of fun there. It's a fun job. I'm still friends with so many of the people that I worked with. And I also just think there's something really, I knew I wanted to write about it. I think there's almost something, it's like the secret world that happens when you go to a restaurant that's happening behind the scenes that you don't know anything about. You don't know about the drama with the servers or the staff or anything that's happening with the owner. You're just there eating dinner. And I love that idea of this whole world sort of taking place, you know, in places we always go, in restaurants that we know, and just sort of not really seeing that world because you're on the other side of it. So I knew I sort of wanted to get to that kind of secret part of restaurants.
Oh, I love that. I mean, yeah, what is it? Half the building, a third of the building is closed to the customers,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe this is a good time to explain the book's title, Marrying the Ketchups. My only food service experience was at a Burger King, and our ketchup came in packets. So, what is marrying?
Did you know what it meant?
I got to admit, I did not. Well, I mean, Once I saw a video you did explaining it, yeah. And then of course it makes perfect sense. But it was new to me.
It is really funny. This was originally the title of the first section of the book, and my editor kept saying, "Can we have this as the title?" And I really kept waiting. You know, I was pushing it off. I really did not want it to be the title. And then finally, I just one day was like, "All right, you're right." But it's a funny thing because I can tell when I would tell people the title. I could tell if they worked in a restaurant or not, because either their eyes would kind of light up or they would just be like, what? What did you say? So marrying the ketchups is side work that the servers do at the end of the night. I don't actually think it happens as much anymore because I don't think people use the glass bottles of ketchup. But at where I worked, we used to take the bottles, you know, that would be half empty and dirty, and we would take them to a table and sit down and then combine them so that it looked like you had brand new ketchup. And I think in ways, I mean, what I was just talking about, the sort of secret world that lives in a restaurant, that's one of those things that once I started working at a restaurant, it just dawned on me, of course, there was not a brand new bottle of ketchup for me every time I sat down. Of course, they didn't go back and get a brand new bottle, but I had never thought about it. And so it was just, I saw things so differently. And so that's what it refers to. But so many people have started reading the book. And when they get to the section where it's explained, they'll say, oh, I was waiting for the ketchup family and this wedding they were going to have. And now I know that's not what this is about. So,
oh, it's great. Isn't ketchup a refrigerate after opening type product? How does that work?
You know, it is. I think we used to put them in the cooler. I mean, I think we used to take them, marry them, and then put them in the cooler for the night. But okay. Yeah, I mean, who knows? I think it could survive.
All right, we'll go with that. All right, we're going to have to take a break in about a minute here.
Okay.
So let me just remind our listeners, we're speaking with Jennifer Close, who is a novelist. Her latest book is called Marrying the Ketchups. She's also a creative writing instructor at the online community and website Catapult. We're going to talk about teaching writing when we come back and more about her book. She was born and raised here in Illinois. The book is set in Oak Park. It follows the story of the Sullivan family and their restaurant called Sullivan's. We're going to continue this conversation. If you want to join us, if you have a question or a comment, you can call in at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I need to set up our exit music a little bit. There's another scene in the book that involves the song Defying Gravity and a group of theater people in New York City singing their hearts out and how much it depresses one of the characters. I'm going to ask Jennifer about that scene when we come back. This is the 21st show. Stay with us.
And leap, it's time to try defying gravity. I think I'll try defying gravity, and you can't pull me. Someone says they're so. Some things I cannot change, but till I try, I'll never know. Too long I've been afraid of losing love. I guess I.
This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking with Jennifer Close, who's a novelist and the author, most recently, of Marrying the Ketchups. She's also a creative writing instructor at Catapult. And 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join our conversation. All right, some of the music we've been playing is obviously tied to one of your characters, Gretchen, her 90s cover band. There are so many wonderful images and references in the book. I don't really like writing or underlining in books. I do a little dot in the margin. I found myself making a lot of little dots. I was hoping, if it doesn't, you know, spoil your creative process too much, and if you remember, if we could just go through some of my favorite little images and snippets from the book, and you can talk about what inspired them. And the first one is Donna Martin graduates.
Yes. Okay. So I have to give my friend Parita credit because she named this band. I knew that I wanted, right from the start, I knew this character Gretchen was a singer, and I had her be a singer in the 90s and in a 90s cover band. There's a great 90s cover band actually in DC, and I'm friendly with the singer whose name is also Gretchen. And they are amazing and they're so fun to see. I know. It was one of those things I told her years ago, you know, anyway, one of those funny things that comes together. But I knew that I wanted a character who was an artist, but not a writer. I think to me, I can deal with the scary parts of writing, but I think one step further is the thought of getting on stage and, you know, how long you try and what it means to be successful and what you're hoping to get from it. So I just loved the idea that she was in this 90s cover band, and the name of the cover band is amazing. I mean, it's just a wonderful name. I'm so happy that my friend came up with it. But it was a lot of fun to write about. And I think in the book, Gretchen is a little bit younger than I am. So there was, I did have to play around, but I love the idea of sort of the way she sings these songs, the memories that these songs, you know, bring up for her, and also how long she's going to keep doing this, because her goal was to do this for a while, but write her own songs and really have a different sort of career. And so she's just kind of figuring out what to do next.
Yeah. And Donna Martin graduates, I guess, a seminal episode of 90210, the informal title.
Maybe the best.
Yeah.
Maybe the best episode. Yeah.
What do you, just as a side cover, say, what do you make of this 90s renaissance happening right now broadly in the culture, right? Friends is like super popular.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
It is really funny. I think it's maybe just the age where everyone is. Like we, you know, it's just like it's coming around, right? It's been, oh God, so, you know, 32 years since 1990, right? Did I do my math right?
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I've just found it's like when I'm in, you know, Rite Aid or CVS, the music playing is a lot of those songs, right? And so it hits me, those different memories from high school and college. And then I think it's just, you know, everything's recycled. And I think probably every generation feels this way, but it is a really funny thing. You know, I'm just going to say it. It's a fanny pack, but I keep calling it a belt bag. And it's like, oh God, these are back. Everything does come back again.
That is one trend I have not been able to get behind. Literally.
I kept calling it a belt bag. And my husband was like, you know, that's a fanny pack. And I was like, well, we can call it what you want. It's very stylish.
Oh, great. Another little visual image that stuck out at me is Jane, one of your other characters, makes a vegetable spread, and her neighbor comes over, and it's like hers is so much better looking, and you say, the kind of produce you get when you order salad from a pizza place. So, yeah. Ordering salad from a pizza place, underrated or overrated?
You know, it's something that line makes me laugh because I'm sure that I wrote that. I continue to order salads because I think that sounds nice on the side of pizza. And every time it comes from a pizza place, most often it's not the best salad you get. And I'm sure that it's hard to remember certain lines I can remember exactly when I wrote. But my guess is I probably wrote that scene a day or two after we had ordered pizza and I had once again tried to get a salad and was once again disappointed. So I'm sure it was in there.
All right. And then going into the last break, we played a little bit of that Defying Gravity from Wicked. And that's just in this passage about Gretchen reflecting on being in this bar full of theater people who, as you say, they were the best in the towns they were from. And then they came to New York and it wasn't even close. And that line just slayed me. I mean, Did it ever feel like that for you as a writer when you were starting out?
You know, it's, I think what's similar with everything, that is, you know, that's a real place in New York that I've been. And actually, it was one of my friends who, it's really amazing to go there and see all these people that know every word to these songs. Clearly, they've performed them. They've auditioned with them. They are so talented. And I remember saying once, like, oh my God, it's amazing. And the friend that I was with said, I find this place so depressing because so many of them are not going to make it. Maybe most of them are not going to, you know, have the career they once dreamed of. I think what's true of, you know, writers, actors, musicians is that it's not always the talent that makes it, you know, I think you can be really talented and things just don't work out. And I think that's a really scary thing to see and accept and live with. So I think that's similar. It's, you know, a little bit different in writing, but yeah, I mean, you know, I've seen it. I have extremely talented friends that have not yet published a book or, you know, or a great book that has come out that I don't think has gotten the attention it deserves. So it's just, you know, you can't control it once you sort of put it out in the world. And that's a scary thought.
Yeah, I bet it is. Do you, you know, there were so many times as I was reading about Gretchen, and you already talked about this a little bit, you know, you wanted somebody who wasn't a writer, was a different kind of artist. But, you know, some of the things that she thinks, it strikes me, I wonder if they resonate with you, right? Like, she thinks Mondays are rough when you're in a band, right? You've got nowhere to go while everyone else is buzzing with that back to work energy. I imagine it can be the same when you're in the depths of working on a novel. What are Mondays like for you?
Oh, it's such a weird, you know, it's so funny. This is such a good example. I usually, almost always, no matter where I'm teaching, I don't teach on Mondays. It's just the way my schedule works out. So when there is a 3-day weekend, I always feel like, oh, okay, I don't really get it off. You know, that's not how it works. It is hard. I have to say, I'm so grateful that I write most of the time. You know, I teach as well, but I loved being in an office. Two of my best friends I worked with at Condé, and I loved going to the same place every day and going out to lunch and getting dressed. And I do miss that. It's hard to get motivated. I mean, Mondays are hard for anyone, but yeah, it can be really hard to sit back down at the computer and get ready to work on this project that most of the time people aren't waiting for, you know, it's sort of your own deadlines. So yeah, Mondays are hard as a writer, I think.
Well, and you say there's community in the office. I think a lot of us have this idea that writing is a solitary pursuit. Maybe even it can be lonely. Do you have, is that your experience? Have you tried to create a community?
Yes and no. I will say it is lonely, but the best part about sort of every little step of my career, I've gathered people. So actually this book is dedicated to my best friend from grad school. We got our MFAs together. I don't even know what to call her. We exchange writing all the time. She's the only person that sees my early drafts. We email about writing, so that helps. And then also along the way, you know, I've met other writers. I had two friends that had books come out the same month as Marrying the Ketchups. And without them, I don't know that I would have gotten through it because we could text each other and just, you know, it's this really weird experience that you only understand when you're going through it. You know, it's my friends and family. It's not that they weren't trying to understand it. They don't know exactly how it feels. So it can be lonely, but I think one of the best parts about, you know, my career and the people I've met is that I have all these writing friends that are like wonderful and so funny and like really have saved me because again, I don't know how that I would have gotten through this last month without these people making me laugh at sort of the ridiculous parts of publishing and the stress and anxiety of all of it.
This is probably your 489th interview in a month, right? So, and that was actually, well, I'm glad you brought her up. Is it Mariah Cleveland? I wanted to ask you about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The book's dedicated.
So
to
we went to grad school together and we just have always, you know, it's something that happens with writing. And I actually see it in some of my, the classes I teach at Catapult. A lot of the classes will stay together. There's just some people that you click with writing wise and you understand. It doesn't mean you're writing the exact same thing, but it's they understand what you're trying to do. And you understand what they're trying to do. And you're able to just work really, really well together. And those people are, you can't even put a value on it. It is so, so important, I think. And really, that is one of the most fun parts about teaching is seeing my classes sort of become that for each other, these novel classes that I teach. And I have one class who has been meeting for years since their class ended. And now they've all kind of been at the same stage of finishing their books. And now they're all querying agents at the same time. And now they gather to text and talk about, you know, rejection and who they're querying and what's going, you know, so it's like they're an emotional support, but they're also like they give each other a lot of information, you know, so it's like, it's just, it's a great, great thing all around to have writer friends. Highly recommend it.
Well, and I wanted to ask about teaching writing, because I mean, mm-hmm. this is one of those Coke, Pepsi, tastes great, less filling, right? MFA versus NYC, perennial debates.
Like, yes.
can you teach writing? Should you teach writing? What should people hope to get out of taking a class like yours or any writing class?
I think, I mean, yes, this is such a debate. I am such a fan of workshops. I love teaching. I love that experience. And I had a teacher really early on in college, Steve Almond, who said, and he kept repeating it, and I don't know that I believed him for a while, but part of learning in these classes is reading other people's stuff and being able to see, you know, where they sort of made mistakes or where they could be better. And the more that you train yourself to read these things and be able to suggest fixes for other people's, the better you're able to do it for yourself. And people always think writing is just this like magical career, but the truth is, it's like anything else. You have to practice. You have to practice and you have to show up and you have to read and write and like put in the time. And if you don't do that, you're not going to get better. And so classes, you know, almost no one is perfect right away, right? I was going to say good, but it's true. It's like almost no one is like has every piece of the puzzle for writing. You need someone to say like, hey, did you ever think about writing your transitions like that? Or maybe this descriptive is a little too flowery. You know, it's all of these little pieces that come together that really help you be able to shape a book. And so I think you absolutely can teach writing. I think if anything else, it's a practice, right? It's you're showing up and just sharpening your skills. And I think everyone needs to do that always.
Do the work always.
Do the work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Just a couple minutes left in our conversation. And I want to ask about something again. And I keep being drawn back to the character of Gretchen in the book, mm-hmm. who, as I mentioned, leaves her band, her 90s band, comes back home to Oak Park. I hope that's not too much of a spoiler. She's trying to figure out whether to continue her career in music. And you have this line, if you were lucky enough to be paid for your art, there was absolutely no guarantee that it would continue. Do you still feel that, that maybe your next book? Yeah, go ahead.
Yep. No, I mean, I think that's just the truth of, you know, I think there's this idea. It's so funny. I think a lot of the things when I'm writing, I don't understand why I'm writing something or where it comes from. And then when I'm done with the book or the project, I look back and I think, oh my God, that is so obvious that I was just channeling so much of my anxiety of writing into Gretchen, right? Because it's true. And it's like I said, you see these really talented writers who either are still struggling to get published, or again, beautiful books that come out that don't get the attention that you think they do, you know, they deserve. And so, yes, that's something you think about something I think about all the time. It just, you know, you are only as good as your last book, and that doesn't mean that it's over. I mean, it's not so dramatic that way, but it's not a given that you get to be able to do this, right? Like you still have to sort of earn it and work toward it. And it can be really scary if you think about it too much. I try not to think about that too much. But clearly, yes, that exact line about being paid for art and how lucky you are and how there's no guarantee is something that I think about probably every day.
Well, I'm glad to say I really enjoyed this book. I hope it won't be your last.
Me too.
Jennifer Close is the author of Marrying the Ketchups. She was born and raised here in Illinois. The novel is set in Oak Park. Thank you so much for being with us
today. Thank you so much.
Show.
And thank you for those amazing audio clips. Best I've ever had in an interview.
Oh, fantastic.
I really, they put me in a great mood. So thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for being here. And that is all the time we have for our show today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.